Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the efforts of the organizers even to create the physical climate, reminding us of the Middle East, which is quite atypical of London weather, I think. I would like to speak on a subject that is somewhat different from the one that is announced. I was to talk about the use of force in Jewish tradition and in Zionist practice, which corresponds roughly to the fourth chapter of the book that the chairman just mentioned. However, much of the material that I meant to present has already been rather eloquently presented by previous two speakers. And so what I'll do is rather tell you the story of reception of Judaic anti-Zionism, both in the Jewish communities and elsewhere. And my book, in a way, has served a good indicator of how this idea of Jewish opposition to Zionism is perceived, how marginal it is, how insignificant it is. Because one of the most common things you must have heard about Judaic opposition to Zionism is that it is marginal, it's a minute group of people that of little significance. And this is precisely what led me to write my book, because a few years ago in Montreal, during a huge pro-Israel rally, there was a group of Neturei Karta supporters who came to demonstrate against Israel, the existence of the State of Israel. And I received lots of phone calls from journalists asking me, we had never heard of Jews opposing Zionism. This is something unheard of. Could you explain it to us? So I explained it once and twice and three times, and finally ended up writing this book. Living in Montreal, I wrote it in French. And it appeared a couple of years ago in French, in Canada. I'm very pleased, and I don't think it's due to the quality of the writer, but I'm very pleased that the book has appeared since in six languages. In other words, there was a certain thirst, a certain curiosity on the part of the public to understand where this phenomenon of Jewish opposition to Zionism comes from. So what I've tried to do is precisely to explain the historical context. Why is it that majority opinion today is considered Zionist in the Jewish world, and particularly the roots of that opposition? To my great surprise, and that's what our chairman said a few minutes ago, to my great surprise, I realized that the Judaic opposition to Zionism, in fact, Jewish opposition to Zionism, whether religious or irreligious, in fact, had been standard in the beginning of the century, and it remained so perhaps till the Six-Day War, till the 1967. So in my book, I'm trying to show different aspects of that particular thing. Let me show you. Yeah, my publisher, usually very kind, has not been able to deliver the book to be able to sell it or sign it here. So you have to look at the cover, take the title if you so desire, and order it through Amazon UK. That's the only way you can get it. Let me try to put it together. Yeah, that's the book. Since it appeared in 2004, I've been invited to talk about the phenomenon quite a bit around the world. And I will want to explain to you what kind of reactions I encountered. Since we have been invited here by an Islamic organization, I'll start with the reactions I received from Muslims. My first presentation of the book in Strasbourg, France, in the largest bookstore, the Fnac, was well attended, and then a Muslim approached me and asked me to speak to a Muslim association of Strasbourg, where I went a few days later. Also invited a few Jewish friends of mine from Strasbourg. And it was quite interesting that the meeting was very friendly, people were very curious, and one of my Jewish friends who sat in the audience told me something very moving. He said, there was a father and a son seated in front of me, and my Jewish friend understood Arabic, he is of Moroccan descent himself, and the son said to the father, "Oh, now I understand the kind of Jews you were always talking about that I had never seen." So in other words, his awareness that there is something else to what he perceives as Jews that exists. And I encountered the same reaction in Morocco, where my book was reprinted in French, and where I met different kind of audiences, including all the members of parliament from the Islamic Party, who were very interested. We had several meetings. Their newspaper covered it quite extensively. And again, they were very pleased to find out that there is something to Judaism and to the Jewish tradition that is different from what they perceived as being Jewish or Judaism is. And finally, I say the third anecdote, which I think is even perhaps the most telling, and it dovetails quite nicely with the presentation of Rabbi Cohen we just heard. At the National Library of Canada in Ottawa, my book was presented slightly over a month ago, because when it came out in English, it just came out in English 2 months ago. One young man stood up during the question period and says, "Professor Rapkin, I would like to thank you. You have cured me of a terrible illness." Not being a medical doctor, I was somewhat taken aback. He said, "I grew up in Lebanon. I am of Palestinian heritage, and throughout my youth, I hated all the Jews indiscriminately. Any Jew was my enemy. I've read your book, I've read a few other books, I've learned that I had been afflicted by terrible illness, and now I'm through with it." So these are the kind of reactions I received from Muslim audiences, and I think it shows that there is an openness and a tremendous importance for opening the debate on the issue of Judaism and Zionism, and that Muslim audiences are quite receptive to it. The experience I've had with Christian audiences is somewhat different. Many people found that the book threatens Israel. This is particularly a case of fundamentalists, so-called born-again Christians, of whom there are 40 or 50 million just in the United States, and the numbers seem to be growing. They have a very attentive ear in the White House, if not 2 ears. For them, Jews have to be gathered, all of us, in the Holy Land as a prelude to the second coming of Christ. An Israeli commentator who wrote a book about the phenomenon of Christian Zionism put it very succinctly. It's a play in 5 acts, and we disappear in the 4th one. Because after the second coming, according to this scenario, Jews will be given a choice to embrace the Messiah or to perish. And that's why the 5th act most probably will happen without the Jews. So from some of these people were quite adamant that the book should not be even read or shown, because it really attacks their basic faith in Zionism, and and needless to say, the number of these people exceeds the number of Jews in the world. So we're talking about a much more significant phenomenon than any Jewish reactions to Zionism. However, there were other Christians who found that the book was a hymn to Judaism. Some others said that it rehabilitated Judaism in their eyes. And for many people, the very fact that there was Jewish opposition to Zionism was a relief. They said, you know, it really helped us look differently at the Jews around us. Because many organizations that claim to be Jewish present a united front, a very monolithic opinion. And this certainly doesn't reflect the reality, to which I will come in a few moments. As far as public that doesn't announce its religiosity, right, unlike myself who wears a kippah or someone else who wears a scarf, that people who don't wear anything, so I can't tell how religious or irreligious they are. And what kind of reaction did I get from them, which are perhaps the majority of the readers? I got quite a few emails, and I also spoke at about a dozen countries about the book, because it appeared in other languages as well. For some of you, one language may be perhaps more important than others. This is an Arabic edition that appeared at the Center for Arab Unity Studies in Beirut. It's available, hopefully, from Lebanon. So the general public reacted to the book as a way of promoting debate. And in fact, that's what has happened. The debate has become more open, not because of my book, because of confluence of several circumstances, including, I would say, in the last 5 years, there are several books that have appeared questioning Zionism from within Jewish tradition, from within Jewish perception. The authors here in London who published books about it. So we have a growing debate about it, and I must say that even the establishment Jewish figures who were never suspected of any opposition to Zionism committed acts that clearly indicate that they have a second thought about the Zionist enterprise. I'm referring to such an establishment figure as Steven Spielberg, the filmmaker who made this Schindler's List, but he also made Munich. Munich, a film that came out last year, and in which it's very clear Jewish values are contrasted with the Zionist raison d'être. It's the leitmotif of the book, and when I tried to show that film, in fact, raises questions of tremendous importance for the Jewish people, almost about the survival of the Jewish people, whether they're going to remain Jews or something else. That film review, I had difficulty placing it. And the only newspaper that decided to publish it was Ydiot Ahronot, a major Israeli newspaper. And that brings me to the subject of Israeli receptions of anti-Zionism. Strangely enough, the most open and the most frank debate I've encountered came from Israel. Israelis live their Zionism. The word Zionism doesn't mean very much to them. It has become a cliche. They know where anti-Zionists are. And they're not, I've not encountered any hostility to the fact that I was writing about them or interviewing them or meeting them. In fact, people were very supportive. In the acknowledgments to my book, I thank several people from the National Religious Camp who organized a seminar on anti-Zionist thought, which I attended, and which provided me with ample material on the subject. So the subject is of interest, because people understand that something is getting terribly wrong. In Israel, perhaps people are much more aware of it than in Jewish diasporas. When you see the preponderant force of Israeli military deployed to no good purpose, for no good purpose and with particularly no results, people ask questions. The fact that, say, Israel has nuclear power, striking power, doesn't help people board a bus and come out of the bus alive. These are the things that many Israelis question, and in fact, in Israel, this openness also is somehow connected with fear. And let me quote a colleague of mine from Bar-Ilan University, Yosef Hadara, who wrote the following about the book, but about the phenomenon most importantly. "This book sheds light on Jewish religious opposition to Zionism, which demographically and ideologically represents the most serious threat to Israel as a state and as a collective identity. In fact, it is a more grievous and dangerous challenge than Arab and Palestinian hostility." End of quote. And believe me, Yosef Hadara is, to the best of my knowledge, not an observant Jew, very different from our two previous speakers. And yet he considers that this is the greatest threat that Israel faces today as a state and as a collective identity. Again in Israel, and at another university where it's easier to find intellectual allies, Yosef Agassi, a philosopher, wrote that as an Israeli patriot and as a philosopher, "I consider it essential to integrate the discourse of Judaic anti-Zionism into the badly needed public debate about our past, present, and future." So there is a thirst, there is an interest in understanding the roots of opposition, and this is why, I suppose, this subject has become, or is becoming, popular. In Israel as well, you have, just on a very anecdotal level, acceptance of a very large chunk of Israeli society that is not Zionist, not necessarily anti-Zionist, but definitely not Zionist. The people live with them, people live across the street from them. There is hostility towards this population. In fact, I would recommend a book by a colleague of mine, also a historian of science who went astray, Noach Efron from Bar-Ilan University, who wrote a book a couple of years ago called Real Jews. And it shows the degree of opposition, or hatred and hostility that so-called ultra-Orthodox Jews or Haredim encounter in Israel. And in fact, talking about anti-Semitism, you can find in that book, Real Jews, copies of cartoons from Israeli newspapers that portray ultra-Orthodox exactly the same way as anti-Semitic cartoons in the 1930s in Germany. So, you know, these dangerous, bearded, long-nosed Jews who endanger the state and so on. This is the kind of discourse that Noach Efron presents in his book, and I strongly recommend his book, which is always easier to do than strongly recommend my own book. Now we get to the diaspora experience. How do Jewish diasporas react to the question of anti-Zionism? Well, here we have a tremendous variety. I would say the country in which there is little attempt made to distinguish between Zionism and Judaism, and where the community appears to be, and I think generally so, identifying with Israel, is France. It largely has to do with the fact that the French Jews are mostly of North African descent, and they're accustomed to the sense of unity. For them, to be Jewish is to be united. Unlike Ashkenazi European Jews, who experienced 200 years of bitter ideological debate and dissent, these people never experienced anything like that. So for them, they prefer to protect the confusion between Israel, Judaism, Zionism. For them, they prefer not to delve into the distinctions and to live in the warm comfort of this confusion. Of course, there are exceptions. I don't want to generalize, but by and large, that's the case. For them, there's a tremendous change of identity that took place, and what many rabbis feared, they became, in a way, Israelis. They accepted a new identity, a vicarious Israeliness. They don't live there, but they sympathize. They, like perhaps some of you supporters of the soccer team of England and Germany, you don't play soccer, but you support it. So there's a somewhat of that relationship that exists in France. And in fact, this is what is the most important consequence of the emergence of the State of Israel and the Zionist movement. And that's what it wanted to do, is to transform the Jewish identity into a new Israeli identity, which to a large extent has been fulfilled. However, if we get to communities, Jewish communities in North America, and I think to a certain extent in Britain, there is a greater receptivity to this kind of discourse. How do I know this? I know it from reactions to my book, from articles that appeared about it. To my great surprise and pleasure, it appeared in rather mainstream Jewish publications. Some of these people are aware that the interests of the State of Israel and the human rights concerns of Jews in the diaspora do not coincide, to put it mildly. Sometimes they're diametrically opposed. In fact, when it's very difficult to argue for equality in North America, when this equality clearly does not exist in the structure of the State of Israel. So this creates a very significant tension, and the tension of identification with Israel has expressed itself in various ways. It was very difficult to imagine an American president more pro-Israel than George Bush before the last election. I hadn't seen anyone. He was really the most pro-American president, the pro-Israel president. I'm not sure he was that pro-American, but he certainly was pro-Israel. 75% of American Jews voted against him. Exactly the same percentage as the percentage of American Muslims who voted against George Bush. So when we look at the voting patterns of Jews and Muslims, they're virtually identical in the United States. This is something you would never guess reading through American Jewish publications, because they are largely expressing the viewpoint of the establishment, which was, I think, more pro-Bush than the Bush family. Yet they didn't represent the interests and the opinions of American Jews. They largely represented the opinions of this Zionist establishment, which is important and which commands some support. But essentially, American Jews are still appear to be committed to liberal values, to human rights, and the overwhelming percentage of them believe that military solution cannot be found in the Israel-Palestine conflict. So, preponderant majority of them. So there is hope in that sense. But also, there's a very vocal hostility to anti-Zionists that you encounter, particularly when our friends demonstrate in big cities while protected by police. They still face hostility. We heard about an omelette that fell on Rabbi Cohen's house. I've seen clips of remarkable hostility directed, I think, at Rabbi Weiss, if I'm not wrong. They were demonstrating 2 months ago somewhere in Baltimore, in one of the East Coast cities, and I saw a clip where Rabbi Weiss, one of his friends, was calmly explaining why Judaism and Zionism are opposed, and a Jew was attacking him almost physically, saying, you are not a Jew, it's a pity Hitler didn't finish you off. I mean, this is the kind of hostility and rage that it provokes. Why does it provoke this rage? Because we are not talking about a political opinion. No political opinion provokes us that much hostility. We are talking about an identity issue. For many diaspora Jews, their Judaism, their only connection is what they consider Jewishness, is the fact that they somehow support Israel or somehow be interested in Israel or something like that. Unlike Judaism, it doesn't require any change in their mode of life. They can continue doing what they do without committing themselves to any Judaic normative framework, yet they consider that they're still Jewish. And I think when this identity, which is extremely fragile, very brittle, is attacked, it provokes hostility and rage. I'm not a professor of psychoanalysis, but I think it makes some sense. Finally, and I think I've about 3 minutes left, we see a somewhat distorted picture. While in Israel, particularly in intellectual circles who are concerned with these issues, the debate is more open, more frank. In the diaspora, it's less so. I think one of the reasons it's more frank in Israel is that, unlike Jewish communities in North America, for example, or in France, for Israelis, there is a reality check. They go to the army, they see what happens. They know exactly what's going on. And that's why they can no longer stick to the myths that have been destroyed over the last 20 years. And there is a growing awareness that some other solution has to be found. For example, the idea of one state, you know, between the Jordan and the sea, that has been floated for many years, has found surprising allies. Recently in Israeli Daily Haaretz, there was an article by a former security official who said, we no longer have a solution, a two-state solution, because we have taken so much land and we have taken so much, we are so predominant that there is no room for a Palestinian state. He said that with a lot of regret and alarm, because the fact that there's no room for a Palestinian state means that it has to be a one state, something which most Israelis still fervently oppose, but they realize that in the quilt type arrangement that exists today, there perhaps no room for a real state that could be viable. So perhaps, and this is why in some Jewish communities, Israeli speakers are the most feared, because when they come, they present views that many diaspora Jews prefer not to hear. Bridges are being built, however, in terms of opposition, as I see it, between the so-called ultra-Orthodox, I don't like the term, but that's what the media call them, other kind of Jews. In fact, some of them express concern about the same Jewish values, but perhaps in different language. And that's why in my book I try to establish bridges between the two, showing that in fact they're saying the same thing but in different language. There's also bridges that are being built, and this meeting is one of them, between Jews and Muslims, in terms of discussion of common issues. And for example, in Montreal, where I live, we have an organization called Shalom Salam, where people meet and discuss, and we have several public events. As a university professor, I'm organizing a conference on religions in exile, the diaspora experience of Jews, and how Islam adjusts to its diaspora existence. So there are several bridges and several avenues of concern that are common to Muslims and Jews, and I think this meeting, that in spite of the heat in this room has kept a good 100 people, I think, here, means that there is genuine concern that if people want to spend Sunday morning in such conditions, they really are concerned about the issues we're discussing this morning. So thank you for your patience and attention. And once again, my book is not available. I cannot sign it. You have to get it without my signature from the internet. Thank you.